As is true with the fish swimming in the sea, big companies grow bigger by eating small companies. That being the case, we simply must ask, should Kroger be allowed to eat Albertsons?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 1372nd edition of the Food Chain Radio Show. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Portofino who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Folks, for the moment, you and I live in a small town of Anywhere, USA. There are two grocers in town. Deluxe Food on North Main and Star Market on South Main. Deluxe and Star have been competing for our grocery dollars by offering their best prices on food. Sometimes Deluxe has the best prices and wins our dollars. Other times Star wins the dollars. All goes well in our small town world until one day a big box store pops up in the neighboring small town of somewhere with really cheap prices. Deluxe and Star are now unable to compete for our grocery dollars with their prices. To survive, Deluxe and Star must do something. But what can they do? With about 5,000 stores between them, Kroger and Albertsons would seem to be big enough to compete for the nation's grocery dollars. And they were big enough until others with different business models appeared on the scene and grew to be much larger. You know the names: Walmart, Costco, Amazon. Kroger and Albertsons, though with many stores between them, now find themselves becoming the little fish in the sea. Their business is gradually being eaten up by bigger fish. What can Kroger and Albertsons do? Well, who better to ask than Scott Moses, who is a partner of Solomon Partners and head of their grocery, pharmacy, and restaurant sectors. Scott, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thanks, Michael. It's good to be here. Good morning.
Good. Yeah. Well, Solomon Partners, mergers and acquisitions. Would you give us a quick thumbnail of Solomon and what it does in the industry of business in general?
So my partners and I advise folks in different industries who are seeking to either acquire other businesses, merge with other companies, sell all or part of their company. And I focus on our grocery, pharmacy, and restaurants industries. I run that practice. And the vast majority of the work that I do and have done for well over 20 years has been focused on the grocery industry. A significant percentage of the assignments that we've executed over the past couple of decades have been for family businesses all around the country. So I've got a real appreciation for the Deluxe and Star dynamic that you just talked about, because it's something that we've been trying to help folks like Deluxe and folks like Star and their family owners, in many cases, their teammates, their communities, manage over several years.
Well, good. There's one question I did want to ask you, and what is the one constant in the business of doing business that keeps Solomon Partners in business?
Well, I think it's the way that we approach our work. So as a starting point, we aspire to be sort of the leading source of industry information and excellence in advisory work in mergers and acquisitions in the fields where we're focused.
Good.
And we don't try to be, oh, go ahead.
Yeah, and it would seem to be the one thing that keeps you in business is the fact that business is always changing, and therefore,
well, that's definitely
there's always true. Need for your services.
Well, that's one of the reasons why you see mergers, acquisitions, and sales in different industries, because as you point out, things are always changing, and that's most certainly been the case in the grocery industry in particular over the last 20 years.
And you've been advising that industry for the past 20 years. What changes do you see in general terms?
Well, the changes have been extensive, and you touched on it a little bit in your little story. But I'd say at a high level, Whereas most people, when they think about grocery, I don't think they fully appreciate the extent to which other grocers outside of supermarket grocers have changed. So grocery today does not equal supermarkets. That was the 1980s. Grocery today equals super centers, plus club grocers, plus a discount, dollar, drug grocers, plus specialty, ethnic, and online grocers, and yes, supermarket grocers as well. They're all grocers. And so, for a long time, go ahead.
Yeah, and 7-Eleven too, right?
Well, yeah, you could certainly argue that convenience stores, they certainly are selling some of the same things, like milk and some frozen goods. Restaurants are certainly selling some of the same things. And what I often say is that they are competing for share of stomach. So it really is all a matter of whether you are rightfully focused on the fact that each of us as consumers has a whole host of different choices for the 21 meals that we eat per week and the snacks in between.
Well, in our neighborhood, we have a small supermarket. We have a discount store right next across the street. And right across the other street, we have a organic food supermarket. And then down the street, we have the Whole Foods. And it seems like they're everywhere. People are selling food because it's the one thing I guess we all need. So get over it. We have to find a place to buy the food. So the supermarket in this milieu definitely is something out of almost another era, it seems to me, because they seem to be disappearing. Am I wrong?
No, you're correct. And so if you look back 20 years, supermarket grocers comprised 10 of the top 15 American grocers. Walmart was number one, but they were only $24 billion in sales ahead of number two, which was Kroger. And I know only $24 billion, that sounds like a big number, but hold that thought. Today, supermarket grocers comprise only 5, not 10, of the top 15 grocers. Walmart is now well over $200 billion in U.S. sales in grocery, more than Kroger. And during the intervening period, what I call the national discount grocers, as you mentioned, Walmart, Target, Costco, Amazon, Aldi, Dollar General, Family Dollar, Dollar Tree, they've added 39,000 grocery stores, such that they've now got over 70,000 in the United States. That compared to less than 26,000 supermarkets that are left. And the average consumer in 2024 regularly shops at 5 grocers, not just one supermarket. And remember that in basically everywhere in the United States, you get service from different kinds of online grocers, which has quadrupled in the last 4 years. Led not by supermarkets, but by Walmart, Target, Costco, and Amazon, which have all got exceptional credit ratings and nearly unlimited capacity to invest because they borrow cheaper than most countries.
Wow. Well, as partner for Salomon Partners and as the head of their grocery and pharmacy and restaurant businesses, what would you advise Kroger and Albertsons to do to survive in this milieu of grocery business as we see the share of supermarkets get smaller and smaller and smaller? What would Scott Moses advise?
Well, I would advise the companies to do precisely what they're doing, which is to merge and create the efficiencies that will help them better compete with these global grocers. Remember, to give you a sense of scale, Walmart is literally 3 times the size of Kroger in the United States. And it is roughly as large as all 4 of its next competitors, Kroger, Costco, Amazon, and Albertsons. It's twice as big as Kroger and Albertsons combined. And so in order to compete with Walmart and Costco and Amazon, and guys like Aldi from Germany, you need to develop the efficiencies that make you run your business in a way that creates more cash flow that you can then invest into lower prices. And if you do that well, and Kroger has been doing that for 20 years, they've affirmatively decided, they've told the market, they've told their customers, and they have done consistent investments to lower their prices such that more folks will keep their grocery shopping in their stores rather than going to as much to Walmart and Amazon and Costco. And by doing that, that's enabled them to even more in better prices over time. And that's how they've managed to maintain some degree of stability in their business. Candidly, if you look across the grocery industry and at other supermarket grocers, many folks have not had the same ability to do that. And that's why you see so many companies ultimately engaging in mergers or in sales so that they can make sure that their companies, their teammates, their stores can continue to serve the communities where they operate for the long run, rather than losing their business, as many have, to Walmart, Target, Costco, Amazon, Aldi, and others.
Well, we have a couple of minutes before our first break, but there's one question that's always stuck in my mind. What did the folks at Sears miss when they missed the opportunity to become Amazon.com?
Well, I think you can always look at businesses that got disintermediated in changing industries.
Disintermediated, what does that mean?
Basically means that they took the customers of the incumbents and made them less relevant. They marginalized their importance.
Wow.
And you can look at, Blockbuster had the opportunity to acquire Netflix. Imagine what their company would be had they done that. But they didn't appreciate the extent to which watching movies and watching TV would change the rise of streaming.
Even though they were in the business. Point,
apparently so. Yes.
Wow.
You could make the same argument as you pointed out about different general merchandise or department store retailers 20 plus years ago as Amazon was growing, because, you put your finger on a really important point for the grocery industry. I talk and have written and talked extensively about the parallel to department stores that the grocery industry has been experiencing. And as I know you know, general merchandise retailers like Sears and other department stores were disintermediated by Amazon, by Walmart, by Costco, the same forces that have been gaining so much share, now literally 66% grocery market share in the United States. That's what happened with department stores. So this notion that supermarkets are losing share and are at risk is not some theoretical point.
It's the real deal. We're going to have to take a quick break. Folks, we are with Scott Moses, partner of Solomon Partners. He, the grocery guy of America for the last 20 years. Right back.
now, back to What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, we are back and we are talking about the nation's grocery business because this is the food chain and we do talk about what's eating what. And right now we're looking at a situation where Kroger is attempting to eat Albertsons in a merger of $20 billion, a lot of money to put together for that. And Scott Moses is with us from Solomon Partners, who helps business see the potential in recombining themselves and moving forward in an era of ever-increasing change. Seems to be moving that way. Things are changing quickly and changing even more quickly year by year. You've watched it closely for 20 years. Is that a fair statement, Scott?
Yes, it is.
Zoom, zoom. So I often think about why the leaders of business miss those magnificent opportunities. Do you help them see them? Do you go to companies and say, look at this opportunity to grow and prosper? Is that part of your business, is to sell the idea of change to businesses?
I wouldn't quite characterize it that way as selling. I view my role as to help CEOs and their teams, their boards, evaluate the strategic landscape that is coming at them, how it's changing, and how they ought to react to protect their teams, to protect their customers, to protect the communities they serve.
Okay, fair enough.
And
well, let's go back to the grocers in question, Kroger and Albertsons. What is the supermarket business model that evolved in the 1980s and seems to be disappearing as we speak? What is it? How do they serve their customers?
Well, I think grocers broadly are trying to serve customers the food that they need to feed their families, to do so at an affordable price, and to do so in an environment that suits their needs.
Okay.
Some of those stores are a little bit more focused on and sort of less focused on services and environment. Some of them are much, much more focused on price. But our population is a wide spectrum as well.
Sure.
And different families are going to prioritize different exigencies for them. In some cases, it's getting the very, very best seafood they can find. In other cases, it's getting the very, very best price on cereal or on Kraft mac and cheese. And so different grocers will approach their communities in different ways to try to serve them. But the most, to me, what matters is they're all selling food and they're all competing for food. And I think that's where, in my mind, if you are a grocer and you know that you've got a bunch of different competitors who are trying to serve your customers, who are trying to hire your workers, you've got to be really focused on that and on making sure that you are serving them well.
Good. It seems to me that Walmart is the apogee of supermarket industry. Am I wrong?
Well, I would call Walmart the apogee of grocery.
Grocery, broadly. Yeah.
And that just, not to be semantic, but that's what it is. Grocery that we're talking about.
That's correct.
Supermarkets are just one of a long series of grocers. Yes, in the 1980s, supermarkets were where most of us bought our groceries. In 2024, that's not remotely the case. And in fact, more than 2/3 of American groceries are bought at what I call the national discount grocers. Only about 1/3 are now bought at supermarket grocers.
What was it that allowed Walmart to grow into such a giant while Kroger was kind of growing, but not like Walmart? What was the difference there?
Well, I think that Sam Walton and his team recognized that there was an opening in American grocery to be more focused on price and enable more families to have a good set of groceries with still a good experience, but you know, on a better budget than we had seen back decades ago.
So when it comes and to price, then Walmart was the king of low price.
Most certainly. And then what they did is they supplemented what were historically just general merchandise stores with groceries. And in so doing, they subsidized their low grocery prices with generally much higher margin general merchandise. So what I mean by that is if you go to Walmart and you buy a shirt or you buy a baseball glove, you're probably doing so at a much higher gross margin than on the very, very low price food that they will sell you. And the reason they do that is because they know that people buy groceries far more often than they buy shirts and baseball gloves. And as a consequence, they can turn those customers into regular grocery shoppers. And then when they need a baseball glove or a shirt or whatever other goods they're buying there, they'll buy those things there too. And that then supports the sort of the broad flywheel that Walmart has created to become just about as large in American grocery as all U.S. supermarkets combined. Ooh. Walmart alone is about a 30% U.S. grocery share. As I mentioned, supermarkets are only a little bit more at just over a third, and that has fallen.
Then it seems like Costco adopted pretty much the same model. You go there for real cheap food and buy baseball gloves.
Absolutely. And look, Costco is the world's number two grocer. They are number three in the United States, just more than Kroger. They are number two on the West Coast, though. And they've now developed over $1 billion U.S. grocery business. Most of their sales, of course, are now grocery. Same with Walmart. Walmart's about 60%. Costco's well north of 50% groceries. Roughly 40% of American households are Costco members. And this is amazing. The average Costco store generates five times the grocery sales of the average U.S. supermarket.
Wow.
That's how strong Costco is in grocery.
Well, there's one more big element here also, and that is labor costs. Because as I see it, the supermarket industry kind of grew up on union labor. Am I wrong?
You're not wrong. That's exactly right.
And what is the impact of that on the competitive landscape? If you're a Costco, a Walmart, or whatnot, and do you have those labor costs?
So each of Walmart, Costco, Amazon, Aldi are all almost entirely non-union grocers. Whereas to your point, many supermarket grocers are unionized or mostly unionized. Now, as you can appreciate, the consequence of that, if you're a supermarket, is that you're now competing for not just for customers with these national discount non-union grocers, but you're competing for employees with thousands of companies that are offering millions of jobs. And foremost among them, of course, are these non-union grocers like Walmart, Target, Costco, Amazon, and Aldi. Those comprise most grocery jobs today. So unionized grocers now comprise a much smaller percentage of American grocery than non-union grocers. But again, you also have got a whole bunch of other companies who are competing for the same teammates who are working in supermarkets and other grocers. You've got gig workers like DoorDash and Instacart and Uber. You've got restaurants, hotels, non-food retailers like Gap or Home Depot, Ulta or Foot Locker. You've got FedEx or UPS. And actually, what I've learned over the last few weeks at the Kroger Albertsons trial is that roughly 98% of employees that go work at either Kroger or Albertsons come from not Kroger, not the other one, but all of these other non-union grocers and other retailers and gig workers and UPS and FedEx restaurants. And 98% of them, if they leave Kroger Albertsons, go to one of those companies, not Kroger or Albertsons. So the labor market is incredibly broad and incredibly competitive. And I think it's important to remember that all things being equal, higher labor costs, any costs, mean higher prices for consumers at the checkout line, because grocery is a very, very, very low margin business. And you can't have it both ways if you want supermarket grocers to serve our communities in the long run. And as Walmart, Costco, Aldi, Amazon, and Target continue to grow, just like they did with department stores, they put severe pressure, not just from a customer perspective, but also from a labor perspective on America's supermarket grocers.
Seeing all these conditions, as you do as a mergers and acquisition expert, whose job it is to help these businesses survive and prosper, what benefits do you think a merger of Kroger and Albertsons will bring to the Kroger-Albertsons combine that will help them survive?
There are a long series of combination benefits, efficiencies that we have seen our clients achieve in many, many transactions over the years. So let's just go down the P&L statement, the profit and loss. Cost of goods. You use Deluxe and Store as your two grocers, or you can say Kroger and Albertsons. One of them buys Kraft mac and cheese cheaper than the other. Well, upon the transaction, they're going to go to Kraft and they're going to say, we want the lower price. And they'll do that across thousands and thousands of different items. That efficiency, that cost saving, is one that we have seen dozens of different grocers achieve very, very effectively over a long period of time. And it's a significant, significant saving. Then there are things like having a more efficient supply chain. So if you've got more stores and you've got more distribution centers, you ought to be able to drive fewer miles, having less truck driver hours, having trucks working less. This at a time, by the way, when there's a severe shortage of trucks and truckers in the United States. So just doing that more efficiently has a significant labor and energy saving. In the store, there's a whole host of different savings that you can achieve just on, for example, having you'll buy more insurance, you'll buy more cleaning products, you'll buy more goods not for resale, like those bags that you take out of the store, plastic or paper bags, hopefully paper, not plastic. And that actually is a good example of a way that the grocer is not just sort of getting bigger and putting pressure on a supplier to do better for them, but that bag company, because they're going to be selling more bags to one company, can run their factories more efficiently in a way that's advantageous for them. So it's a positive sum way for both the bag supplier and their customer, the grocer, to create savings and be able to invest those savings into serving their customers better. I can go on and on. There's a very, very long list of other efficiencies, mm-hmm. but those are just a few examples.
So in classic ag economies, the economists always say that these are related to the economies of scale, which is to say there are a lot of benefits of being big. All of them are related to the fact that you can eat little fish, right? Something like that. So we're looking at a situation here where it appears as though to survive in the long term, do you think that this really is a survival issue for the supermarket industry? That they're able to? Go ahead.
I do. The answer is I do, emphatically. And I say that again, not just as theory, but number one, we've seen that the exact same pressures and results that I fear that you just articulated happening with department stores. By incidentally, many of the same forces, Walmart, Target, Amazon, Costco, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So that's point one. And point two is it is very important for for grocers to continue to make sure that they've got the capacity to invest in lower prices, to invest in increasing wages, and to satisfy what is a significant amount of increasing costs if they're going to stay in business. The bigger you are, by definition, statistically, the better your credit rating. Your credit rating, just like if you think about your credit card FICO score, your credit rating, if you're a company, will directly determine the cost of your borrowing, the cost of your debt. That's important because the cheaper you can borrow, all things being equal, the more you can invest in better prices, in better wages, in more marketing, which drives more customers, in better technology, and in more growth. And so from that fact alone, and that's not something that's often talked about, but it is very important, the cost of capital difference between our largest companies like Walmart, Costco, and Amazon, who borrow cheaper than most countries, and everybody else, is significant. Well, and I can't underscore the importance of that.
All of which make a lot of sense. But what I'm having trouble making sense of is, given the basic survival of our supermarket industries, why is the federal government establishing a strike force of the Department of Justice and the Federal Trade Commission to prevent this merger between Kroger and Albertsons? It just doesn't seem to make sense that the federal government would want to prevent this industry from doing what it must do to survive. And so that is a great question for our guest today, who is Scott Moses, partner of Solomon Partners, who is the head of the Solomon grocery, pharmacy, and restaurant sector. So stay tuned. Why the strike force?
Business owners, get money you need in 2 to 3 days at businessmoneytogo.com. Business Money To Go is a network of reputable small business lenders that compete to lend you money. When you qualify with a one-page application, Business Money To Go will get you the best loan at the best rate in 2 to 3 days. Get $5,000 to $500,000 in 2 to 3 days at businessmoneytogo.com. businessmoneytogo.com.
You can earn a substantial income by farming for the city. All you need to do is take your crop to market and win the competition for the consumer dollars. There is a well-proven strategy for winning this competition. You will find it embedded in MetroFarm, the guide to growing in or near the city for the city.
Port Ideas, Greg Williams.
There's a tremendous amount of useful information in MetroFarm for farming in or near the city.
Acres USA's Charles Walters.
MetroFarm tells how to convert an opportunity into a real going concern. Every chapter is organized around the logic of practicality. For every problem needing a solution, MetroFarm offers a progression of steps arranged in sequence so the desired goal is achieved.
Before you plant your seeds, pick up a copy of the Ben Franklin Book of the Year award-winning MetroFarm. Then plant your seeds and win the dollars. MetroFarm.com. MetroFarm.com.
When you buy local American-grown flowers, flowers will grow and flourish in America. Hello, I'm Deborah Prinzing, author of Slow Flowers for Certified American-Grown Flowers. When you buy local flowers, you're helping our country's family farms reduce the transportation footprint of flowers and enjoy fresher, longer-lasting bouquets. So please, next time you shop for flowers, think local. Think Certified American-Grown Flowers. Visit AmericanGrownFlowers.org to learn more.
Duke the Pug will soon turn 20, which is pretty good for a dog breed that averages 11 years. When Duke was 13, he lost a lot of hair, had a hard time getting up for a walk, and his bowel movements were not very moving. We started making his food instead of buying it. We cook up a big batch of rice, chicken, broccoli, carrots, and turmeric, freeze meal-sized batches, and thaw them at mealtime. We also sprinkle Arthrodex on each meal. Arthrodex is a complete blend of plant-derived minerals, vitamins, amino acids, and enzymes formulated to make old dogs young again. And it does. Duke the Pug does have his problems, but he has all his hair, loves daily walks, and has no problems with his movements. Breakfast is at 7, and if it's not there by 7:01, we all hear about it. Make your old dog young again. Pick up Arthrodex at NutriensToGo.com. And while you're at it, make yourself young again with a Healthy Body Start Pack. NutriensToGo.com. NutriensToGo.com.
So much to say, so little time to say it. On the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Two factors to put on the table at the moment. One, grocery prices have risen 26-30% in the last couple decades. That's a lot. My goodness, a $10 restaurant hamburger is now $20. What in the heck happened? Two, it's election year. And you know those running for office are eyeing the increase in food costs as a problem that they have to solve. And how are they going to solve it? What, how am I on the right track, Scott?
Well, I think it's the right question. So, look, here's my answer, and it has a few parts. You are quite right that all of us have been suffering with food inflation for a few years now. But I think it is really important to understand the real causes of food inflation. And it's important to recognize that there's a stark difference between price gouging, which is a legal activity that's been pursued across the country from Texas to Kentucky, and food inflation and grocery prices, which is determined by market forces, by supply and demand. So the real causes of food inflation, okay, it started with COVID. We had global supply chain challenges. We had panic buying, shipping costs increase. I mentioned the truck and the trucker shortage. Labor costs were up. We've had climate and ecological shortages in meat, avian flu in poultry, soybean oil, oranges, sugar, cocoa. And those COVID and ecological shortages drove food inflation to 8.7% in February of 2022, before the Ukraine war. Then when Russia invaded Ukraine, that drove up the cost of wheat, of feed, of energy, and that brought food inflation up to 13.5% by the summer of 22. And at the same time, and since, the food manufacturers, not the grocers, exacerbated matters by systematically raising prices on grocers, and therefore on you and me and all of our families and friends, and then openly talked about it on their earnings calls. Layer in shrinkflation, where the manufacturers decrease the size or quantity while charging the same price, and we all feel rightly cheated. Now, compare that to Kroger's track record. Kroger has a 20-year track record of investing in better prices, better wages, both company-wide and with companies they've bought. They've made extraordinary public commitments with the merger to invest billions of dollars to lower prices immediately upon closing, to increase wages, to improve stores, which improves the jobs in those stores. And so to me, it is a sharp distinction and really important to recognize that what the real causes of food inflation are and how some companies like Kroger are trying to approach it. Now, it is an election year. And let's be candid, it's an easy political target to go after big companies and say it's their fault. Well, let's make sure we're going after the right companies, because Kroger's track record is lowering prices. And they've done that for a very, very long time. So the notion, and I will tell you, the very, very first point that the FTC made in its opening statement at the trial in Portland, Oregon, was to focus on food inflation and suggest it's the fault of Kroger and Albertsons. I am telling you it is not. And it's a very, very unfair characterization.
Is anything fair now, in political season?
I don't know the answer to that. But I do think truth is important. And if we're going to talk about something that is so vital to all of our families, we should make sure we've got the facts right.
Well, as you mentioned, Walmart is the king of low price. Kroger must figure out a way to compete with Walmart. it must, because that's the competition. Perhaps by merging with Albertsons, it can gain significant economies of scale that will allow them to compete in with that low price position. So if that really is the case, and it seems to me like it is, they would not do very well as a price gouger. It would really destroy the position they have earned over the years in the mind of the marketplace.
You're exactly right. And whether it's Kroger, whether it's Albertsons or any other supermarket, because we live at a time now where pricing is so transparent, and whether it's with Walmart.com or Target or with Shipt or Costco or obviously Amazon, and then Instacart, which has literally got just around Portland, there are 20 different grocers you can shop from online, almost all of them on Instacart, but a few that are not, at will. So you don't have to leave your home to check the prices. You don't have to get in the car. You can literally do it in the time that we've been talking here. Somebody could have done it five times to go and check prices across a bunch of different grocers, fill their basket, decide whether they want it delivered, and there it would be. So there is more grocery choice, convenience, competition, price transparency than ever. And I don't think that people appreciate that. I mean, you mentioned the FTC. The FTC is defining the grocery market essentially as just supermarkets. They're leaving out folks who we all know are grocers because we're all shopping there. We all know the facts here. Just ask your friends, ask your families, your colleagues. They all likely shop at Walmart, Target, Costco, Amazon, or Whole Foods, Aldi, or Trader Joe's, Dollar General, Family Dollar. And out west, they're shopping at Sprouts or Bristol Farms or Smart and Final or Cardenas or Grocery Outlet.
Or the Winco, Farmer's Market.
99 Ranch or H-Mart. Farmer's Markets, New Seasons, Metropolitan Market. I could go on and on and on. And I'll give you another important statistic on this, which is staggering. At the trial, Albertsons talked about the fact that 88% of their customers' grocery dollars are spent at another grocer. So only 12% of Albertsons' customers' grocery dollars are spent at Albertsons. 15% are spent at Walmart. 12% are spent at Costco. 6% are spent at Amazon. And Kroger is only about 7%. Others are like 50%. So it's a staggering amount of competition that all supermarkets are facing, mostly from grocers who are not supermarkets. And to not recognize that, to not acknowledge that, and suggest that Costco and Whole Foods, Trader Joe's aren't grocers who are competing with supermarkets, it's just not a defensible argument in 2024.
So as an observer, you're seeing a tremendous amount of competition for our food dollars from a tremendous number of possible places to shop. And yet the federal government is focused on supermarkets, especially Kroger and Albertsons. And one suspects a lot of that could be for political reasons, because, you know, you need something to yell at, and why not the big boys, and which Kroger and Albertsons would be, but not really anymore. They're not even the big boys anymore. So what would happen, Scott Moses, if the merger were allowed to proceed? What do you see shaking out with respect to supermarkets in that case? Could they still compete with union labor?
Absolutely. And I think that the commitments that Kroger has made are, I think, a good example of what would happen for other supermarkets who would similarly try to find additional scale so that they can compete. Kroger Albertsons will lower prices. It will strengthen and protect union jobs. You can't be more clear than that. Why is that credible? It's credible because Kroger's track record over 20 years is crystal clear. They've invested over $5 billion in better prices for their customers. They've consistently improved prices when they've bought companies, like Harris Teeter, where they invested $130 million in better prices. Roundy's, where they invested over $100 million in better prices. They've reduced their gross profit margin by 5% from roughly 27% to roughly 22%. That is an extraordinary reduction that they intentionally did so that they could better compete on price with Walmart, with Target, with Costco, with Aldi. Amazon, Walmart, Ahold, and Dollar General all increased their gross profit margin by a lot. And then you've got to ask yourself, well, what's Kroger promising for this transaction beyond lowering prices? Well, they've made a bunch of crystal clear commitments. They're going to invest $1 billion in better prices starting day one. So customers will immediately have lower prices at the checkout line because of this transaction, because Kroger's prices and Albertson's prices are different. And we learned at the trial, Albertson's prices are 10 to 12% higher than Kroger. Kroger intends to rectify that, and they're going to start immediately. There'll be no store closures. There'll be no frontline job losses, period, full stop. Kroger's assuming all the collective bargaining agreements, and they've got industry-leading health care and pension benefits. They're investing $1 billion in better wages, $1.3 billion in better stores, which I mentioned earlier, strengthens the jobs in those stores. They're continuing their $21,000 tuition reimbursement program so that their associates can continue to invest in education and accelerate their careers at the company. And to combat food insecurity, and this is really important to me. I sit on a nonprofit that was founded to combat food insecurity. They are donating, Kroger is donating 10 billion meals by 2030 to help combat food insecurity. I don't know if you know this, it is enough to feed every person in Boston, Chicago, Denver, and Seattle every meal, every day for nearly 2 years. It is an extraordinary commitment. These are the kinds of things that will happen when Kroger and Albertsons merge, assuming they're permitted to do so.
And what happens if they're not allowed to merge?
And if they're not allowed to merge, then Albertsons prices will remain 10 to 12% higher than Kroger stores. Then Walmart and Costco and Amazon and Aldi will continue to gain share across America. And if you fast forward the tape, and I wrote a couple of years ago, before this transaction, I wrote an article called A Grocery Christmas Carol, The Ghosts of Supermarkets Future. And I talked about two different views of the world in the future in grocery. And the dystopian view that you ask about is one where we see the logical extension of what has been happening over the last 20 years. Walmart, Target, Costco, Amazon, Aldi, Trader Joe's, Lidl end up having not just 66% share of American grocery, but it goes up to 75 or 80%. And by definition, that means we lose a lot of supermarkets. And we've already lost way too many jobs. The average supermarket employs about 100 people. That's 100 jobs, 100 families who rely on those stores. And the consequence for them is they have to go work at Walmart or maybe to some fulfillment center on the outskirts of town. That is just a different job. And for our communities, okay, where supermarkets can be a great first job, a great career, people will lose many of those opportunities because our towns will change. And if you believe, as I do, that our local supermarket grocers have been pillars of thousands of American communities for generations, then thousands of communities will lose because our supermarkets will not be as strong and we will lose too many of them. And that, as a citizen, is not something I'm okay with. And having seen the consequences personally of the changes in the department store industry 20 some years ago, and then having witnessed all sorts of different challenges for different supermarkets and different circumstances over the past 20 years, as a citizen, that's not all right with me. And I've built a career out of trying to stop it and doing everything I can think of to help our supermarket grocers continue to serve our communities, continue to employ millions of Americans to help their families, and continue to be a great place alongside the different, really global grocers, Walmart, Costco, Amazon, and Aldi, to continue to serve us, continue to be an option. But in the absence of that, we will lose them. And that is something that I personally will do everything I can to prevent.
Well, as an observer, I've often remarked that it seems to me like industry is growing in two directions, very, very big and very, very small. I never thought that a business as big as Kroger and Albertsons would be in the middle, but it appears as that is the case. It appears as though they are now in the middle and find themselves competing with the very, very big and the very, very small. And the only way you suggest, I think, is that for them to survive, they have to combine themselves and fight as a big person would fight. And so what you have laid on the table today makes this Kroger-Albertsons case in the federal court very interesting. Are you an optimist or a pessimist? Do you think they'll win or do you think they'll lose?
I'm absolutely an optimist. I am a big believer that sunlight is the best disinfectant, as Louis Brandeis said. And when you shine a clear light on the facts in this industry, it's very clear. This is not some abstruse industry we don't understand. We all know the facts here. We all know where our families, our friends, our colleagues all shop. We all know how once you shine the light on it and study the numbers as are being brought out in these trials, it's very, very clear how much the industry has changed. Very clear.
With that, we are out of time, but hopefully the supermarket industry is not out of time, and hopefully it can survive because we need as many people competing for our consumer dollars as we can get. Scott Moses, partner, Solomon Partners, and head of grocery, pharmacy, and restaurants. Thank you, Scott.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.